Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the FinTech Fun podcast series, I'm joined by Melissa Donnelly, owner and director of Affinity Communications. Melissa, thank you for coming into Newstead and being in person.
My pleasure. Looking forward to it.
It's a bit of a different podcast today. We normally chat with FinTech founders and people that are involved at executive levels within FinTechs, but today we're not going to, you're not one of them. You're a service provider that has been involved in FinTech for so long in regards to communications, which is extremely important in this modern day and age. Do you want to give the listeners a little bit of a background about Affinity and yourself?
Yeah, sure. So Affinity has just celebrated its 13th birthday, so I keep saying...
Happy birthday, you know, by the way.
Thank you. She's in her tweens at the minute, so hopefully we'll mature and grow up at some point. So I founded Affinity coming out of large enterprise. So that had been my background, both working agency side and in-house as a marketing and communications and brand director overseas and here in Australia. And I realised that there was a segment in the Australian marketplace particularly that was wildly underserved by brand strategists and communication strategists, and that is the small and mid-market companies. And they have so much capability. They are the engine room of the Australian economy, and yet weren't able to access resources and thinking and frameworks to really help them ignite their brands and ignite their marketplaces as a result of that. So that was the sort of thinking that underlay setting up Affinity 13 years ago, which is frightening. I'm dating myself every moment now.
One of the reasons is the cost or just the ignorance, I suppose, of what they're doing. And with big businesses, there comes various teams and levels of executives that actually, you know, do that stuff.
Yeah, I think you've got dedicated in-house resource and huge investments. I mean, some of the brands I've worked for, like MTV and ESPN, I mean, these are $100 million investments that they make into their brands and communications and marketing. So with that comes an infrastructure for sure. But what I knew from the IP that we were developing, and again, these frameworks, that it's a framework. It comes at the price of a framework. It's not all the infrastructure that goes with it, and that you could see much more impact with a much lower investment in small and mid-market companies. So when I see the brands that we come in and either refresh or launch or triage in these mid-market smaller businesses, the impact of a small change is actually enormous. So, and it costs nothing for a CEO to understand exactly what drives their business and to articulate that to their staff, to get their staff to a point they're equally as ambitious as the CEO is about the vision of the company. And then it costs nothing for the staff to become advocates. And then those advocates speak to your customers who become advocates, and they're starting to sell the business for you.
Yep.
So there's no cost to that other than time to think through that and applying the frameworks for thinking.
Yep.
So I guess that's where I saw the opportunity, was to bring a lot of the IP from large enterprise and bring it in and help small and mid-market businesses really use it for their own growth. And again, to dominate their own categories. You know, I get as excited working for rock stars in niche industries as I do for literally rock stars like the MTVs of the world at a global level. I get as excited about a category owner in a very technical category in the tech sector.
And the tangible benefits, not just from, you know, potential investment, but also like retainership of staff, which is hugely important at the moment, and mental health and all these things that come with the vision and the articulation of, you know, coming from above to below. I mean, it must be an enormous impact into an organisation.
Absolutely. You know, as I sort of say, I'm a builder of brands, but what I'm really obsessed about is harnessing the potential of the DNA that's inside every business and then igniting brands with it and igniting really impactful communications so that those brands become addictive. They are the brands people want to work for. They're the brands customers want to buy from. They're the brands investors want to invest in. They're the brands that companies want to partner with. So there is direct benefits in terms of, again, even as an employability brand, what is it that is going to keep staff rusted on to your organisation when they could cross the street for an extra $20 an hour? And, you know, I've worked in industries like labour hire which are incredibly fickle. So how do you translate, again, the brilliance of this business that's sitting in a CEO's head into the minds of a candidate coming for a job, and then in the minds of someone who's been with you for a year and is getting offered more money to cross the street? How do you get that through line to them? And again, it takes consistency, it takes frequency, and it takes an alignment where they go, oh, these are the things I value that are important to me as a person. And guess what? So does the company I work for.
Yep.
That is going to stick them in. Again, you're always going to have competitive pressures from outside, but if your staff have got built into their bones the DNA of your business and know why they come to work every day, what they're there to deliver, the benefit they're delivering to a community of customers or you know, the ecosystem around them, much more likely to stay. So again, that is, you know, very, very tangible impact. And that doesn't even then speak to, I mean, it contributes to, but it doesn't speak to brand equity or the dollar value that sits inside a brand, which you build through putting the right systems in place, carrying your communications right through. So this is the point where, again, not only are customers buying from you, they're happy to pay a higher price for you, for your product or service. They're happy to then advocate for you to their network, which means your cost of acquisition of customer goes
diminishes,
down,
you're
not investing in the marketing. So your margins improve, your customer retention rates improve, your revenue performance improves. So, and as I said, the ability to create that level of impact in smaller cap companies is really exciting, and again, it's tangible, it's real, and it can happen relatively quickly too. You're not trying to turn a Titanic, which with big enterprise you are.
And Melissa, as businesses build out their brand equity and they grow and there's onboarding and customers love their product, how important is it to maintain that through adversity? We're seeing things like cybersecurity attacks or things on social media where brands can be impacted at a whim.
Yeah, I think we're about to see, and I think particularly in fintech and payments, the blowtorch about to be applied. I mean, we have economic headwinds that are impacting both consumers and merchants. We've had very high-profile cybersecurity issues for a lot of companies. And again, they're the ones we're hearing about that are high-profile. They're not the ones affecting the smaller brands. The difficulty is when that blowtorch is applied, do smaller businesses have all the fundamentals in place to withstand it? Can they inoculate their brand against reputational harm that they may have caused or may be coming, like you say, from outside of them, but which affects them? And they are as impacted as the largest enterprise. So what systems can we put in place into these smaller organisations that they can afford to have and to hold and to maintain, that will see them through the tough times? Because it is easy to look good in the good times.
Yep.
We've just all seen it. You know, it's easy to have investors come to you. It's
yeah,
easy to
20,
look good.
20 and 21 in fintech and tech in general, there was a plethora of money being invested in multiple brands that people probably morphed to from, you know, to work for as well, because they're well funded and this and that. But now it's sort of a little bit harder.
It is harder. So again, you know, what do you need to have in place now, or ideally even before now? I go back to the basics all the time. You can't start without articulating your purpose, your vision, your values as an organization, your origin story. Why did this business start in the first place? Because a brand is the reason you exist. You sit down in the coffee shop, you have this great idea, that becomes your brand. So have that bedrock in place. Then you have laid on that the system for communicating that internally and externally. And again, they're consistent, replicable systems. But they also, you need to stress test those. So again, you know, in issues management and crisis management, we intentionally stress test. We will call into companies from the Australian or ABC and blow them up on that particular day and see how they behave under pressure. You can do that every day. You can do that anytime. So, you know, think about announcements. You know, in the last 24 hours, there would have been 3 or 4 significant announcements just in the fintech sector. How have they been managed? How have they been pre-thought? And those companies have stress tested themselves. How have they performed? Are they evaluating that, looking at that, moving on? That is all an ability that any size of business can have. So And again, you know, smaller companies are likely to be in the supply chain for bigger company issues like cybersecurity breaches. Can they afford not to have the responses ready? Can they afford not to have trusted relationships within that supply chain that are hopefully going to see them ride out the inevitable downturns, pitfalls that come with running any size business? So, yeah, so that's why I do talk a lot about these fundamentals. They're just so important.
Looking at the large brands that people are aware of that have new and old, do you think there's threats to those brands now, or are they established enough, well enough to now adhere to something which maybe, you know, absorb the information, like think McDonald's or think Nike or think Uber? You know, there's different messages around those brands, even Netflix, for instance. Like, are they at a point now where they're sort of indestructible, or can they be destructed by various actions within?
I see brands as living organisms. Yep. I mean, I use an awful lot of anatomical language,
polite stuff,
yep, but when I talk about brands.
Yep.
And so my answer to that would be nothing is indestructible.
Yep.
I did, and I can't remember the source for this, but I did see a statistic the other day which pulled me up that it was a CEO sentiment study done by one of the bigger organisations, and basically they were asked of the brands that exist now, what percentage do you think will still be in existence in the next 5 years? 40%.
Right, wow. Okay, so there you go.
It's a sentiment index. But to me, that says that even the leaders of businesses, and these would have been your large listed enterprises, even the leaders of businesses have got their doubts. So I would be giving this advice to large enterprise, which is where I used to play as much as I would now. Nothing is guaranteed, but what you can do is set yourself up for success in the best way possible. So again, go back to the fundamentals. Identify the staff you want to keep and make sure that your brand is delivering to those people.
Otherwise they'll leave, and then all of a sudden you've got brand risk, or sorry, you've got people risk and gaps to fill, which other people now start fumbling in the dark.
And again, I think the opportunity right now, and I always say this, never let a good economic downturn get in the way of success. Zig when everyone's zagging. So at times like this, and again, this is what smaller companies have the agility to do, is, you know, if you've got everybody going quiet, they're cutting their marketing spend, they're cutting their payroll back, doing all the things that companies tend to knee-jerk and do when headwinds are on or a recession's imminent, you have the ability to say, where am I going to double down? And again, there's been Harvard studies done back over decades of downturns that actually prove this case, that strategic investment and double down into certain parts of your business are going to see you not only come out of these things okay, but thriving. And again, I think small and mid-sized companies are in the perfect position to do that. So, you know, I say, when everyone else is zagging, you zig. So, for instance, in ad inventory, you'll probably see price adjustment because people are going to be exiting. They're not going to be spending as much above line. So you'll be able to buy more with your money. Again, think about where you can reallocate marketing spend. So again, thinking about customer retention, how can you, as a marketing and sales organization, be delivering, again, supreme customer service, delighting your customers every 5 minutes, incentivizing them, but retaining that customer base because they're the ones that are going to see you through.
Yep.
So yeah, nothing is ever guaranteed. And I certainly think it's going to be interesting. I would say, you know, you've just got to look at the value of an Apple brand.
Yep.
But they keep chasing excellence. You know, I just bought an Apple Watch, and most exciting part of my day is the packaging.
Yep.
Like the whole experience from the courier driver who turned up on time, to this fabulous packaging and design.
It's all part of, I mean, it's well thought out. And you know, Warren Buffett at his recent meeting said when he invested in Apple, he said people will change their phones first and foremost with an Apple brand more than they would change houses and cars and things like that. So it's at that price point where they've just got, you know, a natural stickiness because of the brand equity that they've built over many, many years to be the...
And they're not resting on their laurels. They're they're chasing that excellence all the time. Yep. So
they're not saying, we're done here.
Exactly, which is why we're prepared to make sacrifice. And again, when consumer wallet is under pressure and we've got to make decisions, it doesn't mean all of us are going to go and buy tins of spaghetti and forego bottles of Verve.
Mm.
In fact, often it'll be the reverse, is that we'll forego eating for the Apple Watch or whatever. And I mean, I hope nobody gets to that point. But
no.
The thing is, these brands that have got their customers absolutely latched onto them and advocating for them and fangirling and fanboying mm-hmm. them, those customers will make, they will spend based on that attachment, and they will forego other things that they're not as attached to, and that comes down to their...
Yeah, it reminds me of when I was living in London during 2008 and 2009, that you would always have a sold-out football game on a Saturday afternoon during the middle of a recession and the global financial crisis. And I'm like, people have chosen to go to the footy over different things because it's their time, it's their moment, it's their family time, it's their excitement for the week that they get. And I was like, you know, there's different choices that people need to make eventually during harder times. And, you know, in that moment there, it was a footy game, and then maybe it's an Apple phone or whatever it might be in the future. But it all comes back down to user experience and brand. But we could talk about this all day, but in amongst it all, and while you're not thinking about all these different things, you live at the Gold Coast, the sunny Gold Coast. What do you do in your downtime, Melissa, to really switch off, if you do switch off? And is there some sort of secret hobby or thing that people don't know about you?
Yeah, so I have slothing down to a fine art. I always say that in my other life I just should be a sloth all the time. So I'm very good at switching off. I am a brand nerd, but I am very good at switching off. So I mean, we live very, very luckily on the water, and that's always a really important... In fact, in every city in the world I've lived in, I've always lived near the water. I'm a water person, and that connection's really important for me. So I do a fair amount of sport in and around the waterways. I'm a terrible surfer. I would love to be a really good surfer, and I've actually found a group of older female surfers that have a club on the Gold Coast, so that's my next escapade. The other thing, which is probably not a great secret, it's probably something family and friends know more of, is that I was actually an Italian nonna in a previous life. So our home, which, you know, I just love, it's our sanctuary, has a 5-meter kitchen bench right through the middle of it. And that is the heart of our home. I love cooking. I adore food and I love cooking. So we've got this massive long bench where people sit and I cook. And then a 2.5 meter dining table where hopefully they eat. And
what are you cooking this weekend?
I don't know. Are you trying to get an invite?
It sounds delightful. Is Italian the specialty?
It's not bad. No, I think it's just that idea of just plates and plates and plates of food. So so I'm sure. And
seafood, obviously, in the heart of it, with the Gold Coast.
Yeah, my husband likes to think he catches it, but he doesn't. He's not in the game, so he won't hear this. But yeah, he doesn't. So I've got great relationships. I always say my butcher and whoever I buy my seafood from are my other serious relationships.
Yeah.
So another piece of trivia which I can share that is actually an absolute addiction that I share with Jeff Yu from Monochrome is we're both motor racing.
Okay, so he sponsored a couple of things in that
space. He has. He's doing some amazing work in that space. So that's my other... I actually worked in the industry many moons ago. I'm going to carbon date myself back to having worked with Peter Brock in the day. Mm. So I'm a very non-technical...
Just enjoy the thrill, the excitement.
I love it. And that smell.
I suppose that comes a little bit like surfing as well, the smell of the beach and the thrill and whatnot. And then it comes to cooking as well, like the thrill and the excitement
of
filleting
three,
fish or whatever it might be. Yeah,
of those three, there's only one that I'm okay at.
Melissa, thanks so much for coming in and being in person, which is great to have people come into the studio here and talk about all things brand and communications with fintech as an overlay. It is a very topical segment at the moment, and it's very high on CEOs' awareness and brand. So obviously people can reach out to you on LinkedIn, et cetera. And congratulations on the 13-year birthday and long may many more years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.